speak all day about how our lives have changed because of the yeshiva. That's for sure. We're always learning. We're always thinking, what would the yeshiva do? What would the yeshiva do? What would Mashiach do? What? That, we're always thinking like that. We're always Talmidim. And to have something like this is a tremendous thing, and it's what the yeshiva is all about. Liman HaTorah. I don't know where to start, I don't know where to end. But it'll always be with us. It's a Hashem, we'll try more of these things. It's a Hashem, and everyone here who came from far and near, as far as Baltimore, Borough Park's further? No. Baltimore, and Borough Park, and the same, and Muncie, and all over. We thank you for that. We thank ourselves. We all appreciate that we're so uplifted, especially for Yamkut of Shuas. Now we're going to share, give some shilas here that I have to the Rosh Hashiva to answer. Should I read them? Or? And if anyone wants to ask any questions after these questions have been answered, you can write and give it.
Opportunity that must be open to a goy on Shabbos and be summoned on a head to Mechira Lechat. Or should I not go into the business? Just many, 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 many years ago, I was young. Heard from my Rebbe Zichron Lebracha that he never ever had anything to do with Het HaMechira of the business on Shabbos. A Het HaMechira, when it applies in Shabbos, that means the business operates, I have the following shaila. From one of my former Talmidim. And there was a donut business in a totally non-Jewish neighborhood. And we opened Shabbos. Shabbos was a major part of the business. And he put the shaila in a slightly different question for him to continue learning in Kolo. If he buy this business with a het mechira, he would not have a dagas panosa for the rest of his life. And now, it goes like this. For those of you who aren't familiar, what it is, means you sell the business on Shabbos, the business belongs to the guy, and 6 days a week belongs to the Jew. And now, there are two types of het mechiras here. The het mechira, which is some sort of a formality, and the real het mechira. Real het mechira means, let's say you buy the business for $1 million. In order to make it a real sale, to have any tzad het with it whatsoever, so you have to calculate what is the value in terms of cost and profit, overhead, etc., which is not a simple thing. Of the value of the business on Shabbos, what's the value 6 days a week? Has to be a real sale to the goy. The real calculation of costs, profits, etc. Only then is there half a mina that it would be mutter. what is currently accepted in the world today as a hetzer mechira, some formality between anius daiti and from all the various serious poskim, I know has no basis whatsoever, and even if it is no losas and malocha, the way the Ramban in Chumash learns it, one violates the Yaseh. That's the Derech Klal. And the person who asks this question assumes in the question that it's certainly good with the Yaseh, the only question is a Chatila. If a person accepts the fact that every Shabbos will not have the Kiyam Asay of Shabbos, and then I guess that's certainly not a Chatila, it's not even B'dievet, I don't know the Heta for it. If there is any Sad Heta for it, the Shaniyas Daiti, and here I reflect many serious Poskim I've spoken to, thing would really have to be an absolute bona fide sale with an approximate evaluation of the cost of the Shabbos business and the cost of the profits and the overheads, etc., which is much impossible to do. For after a day's work, one of Kobayas said in Lima Gemara, Shimon used a Gemara Masifta to enable him to more easily gain a hekka for the sugyu, and made Rishonim Shitas Rishonim, preferable to stick to more classic shots and work to the Chvei Shiyoga Magas. Goes like this. Person who's covating the Torah in a serious way, together with his working schedule. There are two ways of doing it. There is, you say, Lasa B'Yubei Torah. The Torah is an asik. Torah is a preoccupation. Now, some people are able to learn Torah their whole lives. Majority of people are out in the working world and have to be covating them X amount of times Torah. The difference between using a Sifta Gemara and using a regular is the degree to which you're going to be Osei with Torah. Your mind will be preoccupied. Gemara is not something that you just you read like a novel. The mental preoccupation of working through a sugya and doing so on a lifelong basis is what keeps a person connected in the deepest way to Limud HaTorah throughout his entire life. If a person is able to have a serious Seder, and that always comes with a serious nefesh. Yesterday I was sitting with one of our Talmidim who is just getting started in Parnosa and has a rough Parnosa. And leaves the house early in the morning. And then by the time he goes from Brooklyn to Manhattan and comes back to Brooklyn, he's able to learn from 8:30 to 10:30 at night. But in so doing, he's able to have a solid 2-hour Seder. And having that solid 2-hour Seder together with Shabbos, and he's able to still maintain his preoccupation with Limud HaTorah in a serious way. For those who do not have the ability, and that may be a question of choice, that may be a question of the reality of one's parnasa, and it's a question of a choice, to sit down with an art school, even in the Sifta Gemara, means the process of breaking through a sugya, thinking through a sugya, you've been mevater on. And just going superficially through things to get general ideas. No one ever thought through a sugya well, whether it's in yeshiva, out of yeshiva, when you're in the working world, unless you sit down with a regular Gemara, think it through, and work it through. If it's at all possible for a person to simply continue a Seder with a serious amount of mental preoccupation, that's the ideal that connects him to Torah throughout his working with career in a way that simply sitting down with an art scroll or a Mesifta Gemara does not enable one to do. How and when does a person know he should move on from polo to play Kodesh position in general? He should determine what he wants to do. That obviously is a very person sitting and learning Torah. And the various, they're two different factors. The two different factors operative here. One is financial pressure. One is personal pressure. If a person feels that he sort of has plateaued and his fire for Yom Torah is beginning to wane, then obviously he does not belong to any cult. Some people need the challenge of a job, a machayev of a job of a, whether it's a Klei Kodesh job, whatever it is, to keep their youthful enthusiasm moving. Very few people in Chazon Ish who keep that going their entire lives without that challenge of having to give over. And for a person who has the financial ability and who can still keep with that youthful enthusiasm, certainly it's a schus to be able to be market storer, and that's a schus. But for other people, it's a part of maintaining their fire in Limud HaTorah is the ability to give it over, to communicate it to others, and to share it with others. And that is, and that obviously has to be integrated with one's financial abilities to do it. However, and even if one doesn't feel the necessity, some people do. I remember many years ago when I opened up Yeshivas Taras Moshe, my good friend Rabbi Shurkin, who was a little frustrated, he didn't have the opportunity to share his Limud Torah with others, called me up and said, the moment's an opportunity, I'm moving to Eretz Yisrael. He was sitting and learning, Rabbi Shurkin will always have this youthful drive in Limud HaTorah, but in terms of his own personal growth, he felt that there was a tremendous necessity for him to share that with others, to give over to others, and that would stimulate his further growth. I know in my own life, it wasn't a question of my losing my drive, but again, at a certain age, I felt that it was necessary for me just to give out and to share it with others. And that's a certain personal, that's something each person has to determine for himself. It's a reflection of his personality. And no simple formula exists for everybody. Early Shabbos. Early Shabbos, here it says, early Shabbos, nispashe minig belegle. I don't know why I became belegle, minig becholo and kulo. Mao das, Varana Rabban, Bezev Halof of the Minhog, and Yesh Bezev Ishtani Minhog. The Gemara says, Rav Tzoli Shal Shabbos B'Erev Shabbos. Now, Rav Tzoli Shal Shabbos B'Erev Shabbos had one great advantage over us. He knew all the halachas what to do in such a situation. We are not as fortunate as Rav Shitzoli Shabbos. And I do not want to speak against any minhagim. Exactly how to conduct oneself with davening Maariv is totally the machlokes gedola. There are, according to many days, one should, if let's say one is in a shul, one should daven Shmoneh Esrei, and say Krishna with brachas after the Suda. Others say no, you can daven full Maariv and then just say Krishna later on. Yesh for yesh. If I find myself in such a situation, Bhavano said, Rav, I have to spend a good amount of my time traveling the world. And if I have to spend time in a place where they Kabbal Shabbos early, I do it. I then, in Somech on the Sheet, is the Daven Maariv early, after Plag, and then to say Krishna later. That is the sheet of many, many, many Rishayim, most Rishayim, but there are Rishayim who say not to do that. But there's another issue, there's the issue of Mincha. The Gemara says in Brachos HaChavzayim, Yovah Kamarov did Yovah Kamarov. That means, there's Machog has been reviewed in the Chachamim, until when you can sit Daven Mincha. You can Daven Mincha till Plag, and if you Daven Mincha till Plag, then you Daven Maariv after Plag. And the Chachamim say you Daven Mincha till Shkia, or maybe till Tzeis, and then you Daven Maariv after that. If you, and how do we pass in that machlok from Yiru and the Chachamim? The Gemara says the Ovid Kamar of it, the Ovid Kamar of it. There is a sheet of Rabbeinu Tam, where Rabbeinu Tam says, so you can daven, and you can, where you would pass in a stirit, you can daven in after Plag, and Maariv before Shkia. That's a sheet of Rabbeinu Tam. And on the other hand, a sheet of other Rishonim is no. The two sheets of Rishonim. One sheet is Rishonim that you have to decide for your entire lifetime, you pass the Yudha Chachamim, and that's the way it is. You have a daven mincha after Plag, and you never daven Maariv before Shkia. And then in any specific day, you can choose what that day is. The Ikka P'sak in Shulchan Aruch is like Rabbeinu Tam. So the Ikka P'sak is that one is allowed to daven mincha after Plag and Maariv before Shkia. However, l'chatchila, you should be yotzei the days of not doing that, and that day that you accomplish Shabbos early, daven mincha before Plag, and then daven Maariv after Plag. But the essential issue here, which is people sometimes gloss over, is that Rabbeinu, even though the Shulchan Aruch paskins that way, like Rabbeinu Tam, Shulchan Aruch also paskins of Rabbeinu Tam's Tesa Kochovim. Rabbeinu Tam, according to Rabbeinu Tam, Plag HaMincha is 3 minutes before Arav Shkia. And according to Rabbeinu Tam, someone who followed Rabbeinu Tam is essentially davening after Shkia. Whether those two sheets of Rabbeinu Tam are connected one with the other, Yesham Rahochi, Yesham Rahochi. The general meaning is to separate those two sheets of Rabbeinu Tam and sheets of the Shulchan Aruch. But it's not 100% clear that you can do it. It is the meaning of the world to accept it. I personally try to avoid it if I can. If I can't, then I daven mincha before Plag and Maariv after Plag before Shkia. But the evidence, one certainly can rely on Pesach Shulchan Aruch that one can daven mincha after Plag and Maariv before Shkia, because the Ikka P'sak Shulchan Aruch is like Rabbeinu Tam.
Is it better to daven
the
Yechidus before Plag and
Yes, better daven. When I'm sure, yeah.
Is there a minute specifically to be more makel on Arab Shabbos than other times? Or is that just because
it's
practically?
There's no reason. Not to the best of my knowledge, no. There's no mark in the halacha to distinguish. Now, people have sometimes get a little bent out of shape about Shkia, even with Gabi Mincha. They don't realize the Shulchan Aruch paskins Ramah Paskins, you can daven in Chutzai Sebuchov. And you don't have to, it's a b'diavid, but Ramah does Paskin b'diavid, if that one can daven Mincha after Shkia Chutzai Sebuchov. If, obviously, if one davens Mincha after Shkia until Chutzai Sebuchov, so then one would never be allowed to daven Marav before Chutzai Sebuchov. But the minig of chassidim of davening mincha late is generally misunderstood. That stems from two separate things. That stems from the fact that in most cases, that certainly in the entire Austro-Hungarian Empire, that's Czechoslovakia, it was Czechoslovakia, Austria, Hungary, Romania, and in Germany, Rabbeinu Tam was kept Bein L'chum or Bein L'chul, and people did melacha after Shkia. And in Russia, it wasn't parts of Poland. And therefore, if you keep Rabbeinu Tam Bein L'chum or Bein L'chul, so you daven mincha way after Shkia. Nowadays, no one is making like Rabbeinu Tam. The famous story, when Tzapa Rav first came to Eretz Yisrael, he was used in Hungary to do Mechal Shabbos after Shkia. And first Shabbos he was there, and people told him, you know, that's not going to be that acceptable here in Yerushalayim. But the old minhag of Chassidim of davening mincha very late came from the fact that they kept Rabbeinu Tam Bein L'chum or Bein L'chul. And even nowadays no one does that, many people who do conduct themselves with Ikir like Rabbeinu Tam after Shabbos, so they're makel therefore regarding mincha. Someone who is not makel, like is not machmel like Rabbeinu Tam after Shabbos, has absolutely no business davening mincha after the groz on Ben Hashmarshes, which is around 10-13 minutes after Shkia. When a shul from Eretz Yisrael comes collecting tamara for child.
Okay,
what?
When Rambam says taste the chok and plus the chok, it's mommy says the chok or
The Rambam says the chok. So that is it, and since there are more passes like Rabbeinu Tam. Now, so let's assume if you don't pass like Rabbeinu Tam, it's 3/4 of a mil after Shkia. If you do pass like Rabbeinu Tam, so the Tzei Tzekel Chovim is 4 mil after Shkia. That depends when you go like Rabbeinu Tam, don't go like Rabbeinu Tam.
Is there a sheet of 50 until they get down until 50? Yeah, in
fact, the sheet of 50 is a sheet of there's no sheet of three sharing those 50. There's no anchors at the bar. The sheet of what's the next? Name circle escapes him. And I'm going to record it. What?
Mrs.
Kane? Mrs. It's based on Mrs. Kane. Based on the Minchas Kohen, I've never lozachisi lohavin the Minchas Kohen. In Rishonim, we find the Shita, what's called the Shita's Hagonim, which is based on a tshuva of the Chai and Rishira Gon that's brought in Marama Hashkar, that Shkia sunset, and that's the going went that way, and therefore Tzei Sefer Chodim is 3/4 of a mil after that, maybe with the addition of 2 minutes, depending on the Balakam. Now that 3/4 of a mil of the draw is Lefiha Ofer. These are two ways of viewing what Ben Hashmarshes is. Ben Hashmarshes is 3/4 of a mil at Yerushalayim, at the equinox, is a certain amount of darkness. How far the sun is underneath the horizon. The Gemara says that that amount of darkness, which is three stars, you know, we don't know how to cheshbon nowadays, but those three that amount of darkness is three quarters of a mil, is the is the kovea. Now, and that amount of darkness is changes throughout the year and changes according to the weather. That's the Shita Sagroa, very, very clear. On the other hand, Shita Sabayotam is the Shita of Rov Rishonim, that 3.25 mil. Now, Harcheshman 3.25 mil is that a certain amount of time, it's a certain amount of darkness, it's not so clear. The general assumption in Rabbeinu Tam is that's a certain amount of time, not a certain amount of darkness, and that's how you measure it. And
3.25 mil.
That's the that's but that's here. And after that is Ben Ashmarshus, and at 4 mil it says Rechov. So according to the Ramah, if you take the Ramah together with Rabbeinu Tam, and the Ramah happens to pass in like Rabbeinu Tam and the Shabbos. So you can dive in Mincha to the other until Dalit Mil after sunset. That's Mary with Stephen. People think it's based on who knows what. It's a very, very simple question. And if you make it, the only thing is, there are some people who dine it, that there are 2 days in the middle of time where the Dam Nisho Pushkir Sachama, 2 days in Tesis, is Shkir Rishon and Shkir Shnir. If Tfilas can make between the Tikkun and Dam is Nisro at sunset, so then you could only daven Mincha until Shkir, even with Rabbeinu. But that's 2 days in this. It's not clear what the final one's going to involve of all the Shkirs in Rabbeinu Tam. Yes.
So my
son
walks in, Abba, I didn't
have a
mincha yet, can I still
have a
mincha?
Until 3/4 of a mil after a shkir.
What's that in minutes? 10-15 minutes.
10-15 minutes.
After 15 minutes, I tell them 2 miles.
Yeah. It goes like this. It depends on, you can get complex tables that it varies through the year and it varies with latitude. From Maine to Florida, it varies, and during the year it varies. At no point is ever more in continental United States, never more than 30 minutes. It's never less than approximately 10 minutes. Most of the year, it's more than 15 minutes, okay?
You
can plot everything, you can get complicated table, but if you need a rule of thumb, it's 10, maybe 15, yes.
By the beginning of the time, can you eat after 16.1 degrees, but before 72 minutes?
That's when you talk about alos. Is 4 mil before. Just like there's a machlokas in Sefer Kochav, whether Rabbeinu Shitas or Rabbeinu Tam, depends on the amount of darkness, which is, let's assume it's 16.1 degrees, or 72 minutes. Same thing is true Lagabe Halos. So if one assumes that eating before davening is a din d'oraisa, it's a major issue whether it's a din d'oraisa or din d'rabbanan. That depends. You have 2 days. Since people generally, the overwhelming minig of Klal Yisrael, Legabi Motzei Shabbos, is the people keep Rabbeinu Tam, keep a fixed amount of time on the clock, 72 minutes. And there's a letter from a star from the Chofetz Chaim, where the Chofetz Chaim writes, the only one who did it in Zmanios rather than Fuos was the Beis Knesset HaGadol in Minsk and Reb Chaim. So, but the minimum of all Klal Yisrael was 72, and if it's good enough for Shabbos, it's good enough for eating before davening. There's no reason to be more machmir, or Gabi Chilul Shabbos, than to be machmir when it comes to davening. The assumption is that the sheet of Rabbi Tam takes a certain amount of darkness through Shalayim of the equinox. We translate that into a number, and what's covey is the number because it's next to impossible to function with that degree of darkness throughout the world, and you have to have astronomical tables, and the meaning of halach is to have portable things rather than complex astronomical tables. That's why people assume that it's a fixed number. Vashenken, according to the Grub, it's a much more easily discernible thing on the horizon to figure out exactly when 3/4 of the mill is. And when Mashiach comes from Eretz Yisrael, comes collecting to marry off a child, one of 10 or 15 children, and he has no record of pursuing regular hishtalus for panosa, as in a kovel check. How are we in America, from an American mentality, supposed to view that? Okay. If you read the recent decision by the Supreme Court of Israel past week, they have their view. However, unfortunately, the halacha has a very different thing. Let's assume he does regular hishtalus for panos. To marry off a child in Eretz Yisrael necessitates a dira. A dira, the smallest dira in the most outrageous corner of Eretz Yisrael is going to run today a few $100,000. The average take-home pay in Eretz Yisrael of the median point is around $2,000 a month. Assuming that both people are working at a median wage and they don't spend any money on food, clothes, etc., it's too much they have to marry off your children. So everyone has to keep everything in perspective. The government has many different contradictory policies. That's number one. Number two, there's a there's a very unknown to people group of Maimori Chazal that Meiser Sofen basically goes to Lom Beit Torah and not for all the other things. Those of you who recently left Torah's Moshe, we have a buffer in Torah's Moshe, Rafi Meyer, whose father just wrote an excellent English book on. He's an accountant, so he has all his accounting theories about how it works, but bottom line, it's he brings all those Maamar Chazal. How is someone from an American mentality? There's no such thing as American mentality, it's a Torah mentality. It's a Torah mentality that very, very simple, that one supporting Lom Beit Torah is a mitzvah, and Ikir Maaseh is supporting Lom Beit Torah, number one. And that, despite everything you read all over the newspapers, despite the so-called Shitas HaRambam, and so there's no reason from the point of view of halacha not to help him marry off his 10 or 15 children, number one. Number two, and this revolves around our current situation here in Israel. The one who wrote this question obviously spent a certain amount of his time learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael. Why is it that learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael, people come to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah? And what would United States Yiddishkeit look like today if you did not have the vibrancy of learning Torah in Eretz Yisrael that you have? It would be very meager at best. The United States lives off of the fact that Eretz Yisrael is a vibrant community of intense, serious Limud HaTorah. That is the electricity that generates much of the enthusiasm for Yiddishkeit in the United States. in every dimension of the Orthodox Jewish community. The modern Orthodox world, without the yeshivas, has there where people go, would not look anywhere near where it does that. And the United States, living off of that vibrancy and Limud HaTorah that Eretz Yisrael gives to the world, is getting off cheap, but then by just supporting all these people who are running around with supporting it, with buying gears for the 10 or 15 children. So that's the second thing. And a person has to make a decision. Is my life going to be revolve around Limud HaTorah with all the hardships and all the difficulties and all the privation that comes from it? But if he made that decision, then it's a very clear halacha that one is certainly a valid socket to support him, enable him to build a family, enable the next generation to continue. So yes, how someone from a Torah mentality looks at it is exactly, yes, the Torah was mechayev you, number one, and number two, your own Yiddish guide has drawn on that enthusiasm for Limud HaTorah that the Israeli Torah society has generated. And paying attention to all the things in the press, it just is not paying attention to all the Ma'amar Chazal and Shitas Rishonim that justify this, number one. Number two, for the past 200 years, the idea of Torah and Eretz Yisrael goes back, the way this current structure of Eretz Yisrael goes back to the Talmidei HaGra and the Talmidei Baal Shem, who came at the beginning of the 19th century. European society completely, at that point, took upon themselves, there was no American society, the European society at that point took upon themselves completely to support that those people who moved to Eretz Yisrael for a higher level of Limud HaTorah, because they knew that European society was in the end, that was their achrayus. Now, often Shulchan Aruch, which is, people don't like to hear that in the United States, that Ani Eretz Yisrael and Moses Torah of Eretz Yisrael have the same halacha as Ani Yericho and Moses Torah of Yericho. It's not that Eretz Yisrael is viewed okay, just like in Passaic, they don't feel they have to support Moses at Torah in Los Angeles or in Chicago. No, halacha in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchot Tzedaka that says the Moses of Eretz Yisrael have, and all in Yonit Tzedaka of Eretz Yisrael have the same halacha as your own city and your own community, because Eretz Yisrael is that focal point of Yiddishkeit that gives strength to the Yiddishkeit in the rest of the world. There is a recent proliferation of masitos that do not teach secular studies. As a general matter, would the Rosh Hashiva recommend sending our children to such masitos? That is too general of a question to have meaning. That means reality of life in the Eretz Yisrael is one reality of life. The reality of life in the United States is another reality of life. Reality of life in the United States is that at a certain point every human being has to worry about parnosa for his family. And that necessity to worry about parnasa. Certain segments of society can do it without high school studies, and certain segments of society can do it, need high school studies in order to do it. If those, obviously, anyone who's familiar with, let's say, various Hasidic communities, Satmar, as a general Chassidus, is a very rich Chassidus. People there in Parnassus very much, and they seem to be able to worry about their Parnassus without the necessity for secular studies, for all the different ways they do it. And if it's not part of their Parnassus needs, so then the question is, you're involved in Limud HaTorah X amount of time of your life, have to worry about parnasa at a certain point, and then you and they're able to do it. People in other dimensions of society here, whose parnasa needs come in a different way, are going to generally need a basic high school education, at least a high school diploma, in order to function in a parnasa setting. And therefore, the question is, reflects exactly which part of society you're in, how this is going to integrate with your parnasa needs someday, and how you plan for the future. For some people, a high school education, the different things. Here it's talking about there's education, diplomas, and the different ways people make parnasa. Some people make parnasa one way, some people make parnasa a different way. And that person has to be grounded in a reality and not wake up at age 25, so how am I supposed to support my family? On the other hand, one can do it in a way that will make more efficient getting those skills that you need for a parnasa, rather than being clamped down with all sorts of things that are irrelevant to parnasa, and to maximize that period of your life when you're supposed to be building the knowledge of Torah and you're building your identity as a Ben Torah. Okay, is there any? These are written questions. Yes, Moshe.
Does Rebbe see any value in secular studies on its own without the necessity of employment?
Certain things have absolute value, certain things have relative value. Torah has absolute value. Anything else has relative value. For most people, the secular studies will not impact at all on their Havanas HaTorah, will not contribute to it in any way, and therefore it has only practical value of someday, of how you're going to enter the world of Parnas. There may be a few, maybe a Miyuta, who can use some of the secular studies to as a means of communicating Torah, etc. So then it contributes to the value of Torah. You have to always see what has absolute value under all circumstances. That's Torah. Everything else depends on how it fits in with Torah. And so Parnos is one way, because you have to nefarish your family. There's a miyuta, the miyuta of people who can use what their secular studies some way of communicating Torah, so for them it has a Torah value. I don't know whether it contributes to the Havanas of Torah, it contributes to the ability to communicate Torah. That's a miyuta to miyuta of people. It's not an overwhelming number of people. What they say, if you miss a certain amount of, there's a quote from the Gra, which Nagdomatai or Mashulish, that for every amount you miss in knowing the world, you miss so much in Havanas HaTorah. I can't believe the Gra said that. It's only someone on the level of the Gra who knew every aspect of Torah completely, and there were a few areas of Torah and you had to know plane geometry, etc. That's around two Blatt and Shas. And that two, three Blatt and Shas certainly does not justify who knows the amount time that has to be put into it. So for people who like the Gra, who have to master every aspect of Torah, so the Gra had to know plane geometry. But the amount of plane geometry necessary from Sefta Sukkah, for those of you who are learning Sukkah now, is very minor. It's not really major. And the amount for the Sukkah and Erevin, a few Sukkahs and Erevin, is minor. So then it what contributes to Torah has absolute value. And what and everything has been measured, how it contributes to Torah. Nothing, the only thing in this world that has absolute value is Torah.
Okay.
Yes.
So
Mishlachim again, go back to Mishlachim.
I lived in the United States, and I had a home, right? And I had people knocking my doors at all times. And I remember writing out checks all the time. And I called my wife with the minimum. What we give everyone. One day my wife called, we had 7 people for that. There was nothing left in the bank.
Question?
What? There are halachos, hilchos tzedakah. And those hilchos tzedakah say that it doesn't mean you have to give everyone $100, it doesn't mean you have to give, depending on the traffic, you have a tzedakah budget and you divide your tzedakah budget, taking that into account.
I guess what I'm asking is it an ideal for the masses in Israel to be running around
the
America?
Your job, there are two decisions that have to be made. There's the decision of the people who are sitting here in their homes in Passaic, New Jersey, Garden Hills, Muncie, Lawrence, wherever you may be. And what their response is to the person knocking on the door. And the pasuk says, tiftachas yadchol, and very, very clear. And the member of the Supreme Court, the key pasuk, Yochanan Rubinstein, who says that when someone knocks on his door, he tells him, go get a job. Unfortunately, he's not that serious at the Talmud Chacham, to know, or he doesn't know Chumash. And it says it's an absolute, this is the right thing to say that. There's a Yerushalmi that questions, which he's also oblivious to. The Yerushalmi talks about someone who can get a job, and the pashas of Yerushalmi is you still have to give him tzedakah. And that's not taking into account the mitzvah from the Mefarnes Lomdei Torah. Now that's one question. The question is the person who's sitting here in the United States of America and someone knocks on his door. There's a separate issue, and that is issue in social management. What should the attitude of people who are leading and managing society in Eretz Yisrael be? Now, the reality of life is, as I said, in terms of marrying off children, even if you had a median wage, the median wage, a 50% person who's out there earning a living is barely scraping by putting food on his table and has no money to marry off his children. So the difference of his learning in Kollel, the extra few $100 here, the extra even $1,000 there, is not making any significant difference in his ability to marry off children. It doesn't work. When our genius Minister of Finance talked about de-risk under 600,000 shekel, and they saw that in the entire country there were 200 sales in the past 12 months of partial, not even full de-risk, partial de-risk under 600,000 shekel. 600,000 shekels are $175,000. And $175,000 with the current mortgage means you have to put down 40%, which is $70,000. So even just to make a down payment on one room, what down payment on a one bedroom with a minuscule kitchen is beyond the ability of anyone who's earning a median wage. So that's simply the reality. But there are two separate issues. The issue is what is the approach of the person here who someone knocks on his door and says, I have no money, and there's a pasuk that says, Pasuch tiftach es yodcho. That's opening the mouth. Lo sa'amitz es levovcho lo sikvotz. Lo sa'amitz es levovcho lo sikvotz es yodcho. And that is simply, that's one response. The people who manage society in Eretz Yisrael, that's a different responsibility. That's not the job of the person sitting here. I think they should be doing X. No. I have a human being knocking at my door. I have a human being knocking at my door. Since that is, and you have to look at him as a human being, not part of a statistic, not part of a totality, he's one human being, not an idol who needs money. That's it. And that's what the response is. You're not managing society. Some of you is managing society. That's his decision. He has to decide how to manage society. But the person here gets a yochid, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, knocking at his door, and he has to respond to that yochid, not to the masses. There may be seven every day. That's it, because we're going through exceedingly difficult times. But that is the job of the person here. There's nothing in Shulchan Aruch that tells the person sitting here, manage society over there. No. Halacha in Shulchan Aruch says, you're here and a Jew knocks on your door and needs money, you have to give it. That's it. Mentality, American mentality, that's a pasuk in the Torah, it's halacha, the Rambam, halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and that's simply what the Torah demands of everything. A Jew needs money, you have to write a check. What should be? Take it up with the people who make those decisions. Pick up the phone, try to convince them, try to talk to them. But the job of the person sitting here is, there's a Jew at my door who needs money. A Jew at my door needs money, you have to respond, give me money. So I post it in the Torah, and it can be seven people a day, it's who knows what. But the Torah didn't give a number of how many I need. I'm knocking your door and you say, I can't, I'm stopping. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra. Remember many years ago, when I was first married, I was living in Manhattan, I davened in a shul there. And they decided to, it was very annoying to have people coming around during davening asking for money. So they put a sign, you're not allowed, and the people came anyway. So they began chasing them out of shul. And I remember that happened to me, happened to shul, I was davening in Lel Slichas. And I went over to the Rav of the shul, I pulled out a Gemara Baba Basra. And the Gemara Baba Basra says that if you make a beishar, that you have a gate around your house so you don't hear when the ani knocks on the door, and you don't allow aniim access, Elyon no becomes, there's no bruch in the house of it. And I said, the Gemara Baba Basra says you're not allowed to chase the aniim away. Yeah, it disturbs my daven. I said, it disturbs my daven. I said, fine. So I'll obviously, if Mora says, Elyon Novi, stop coming, there's no bracha in such a place. So the next morning, I had to find a different shul. It disturbed my daven. Everything. But the Gemara says what the Gemara says. My job was, as much as it disturbed my davening, in the halacha that says your house has to be accessible to people can knock on the door and you have to answer the door. And you think only here? And a normal day in my house in Hanover, I get 10 people knocking the door. On a normal day. Because they don't have to fly over the ocean to knock on my door. It's just, you just take a bus. 10 people, and Erev Shabbos, especially with all the government cuts now, Erev Shabbos, my wife and I decided she's in the kitchen, she has to go to the door, she won't be able to make Shabbos anymore. Non-stop. People don't have money for Shabbos. So I'm supposed to, Erev Shabbos, they knock on the door, they don't have money for Shabbos. So I'm not supposed to say, go get a job. That's what I'm supposed to say, go get a job. The Torah doesn't say, tell me, go get a job. What does the Torah tell me to do? Erev Shabbos, then I have money for Shabbos. I go. And I give them, I feel the money. The Torah tells me to go. The same Torah tells me to keep Shabbos.
You have to stop Shabbos preparations to give
what?
You have to stop Shabbos preparations to give
that in? The question is, in our house we split it between myself and my wife. But would my wife have to stop? That's part of the Swigosim Mitzvah, Potanah Mitzvah. If it reached a point that she wouldn't be ready for Shabbos, then probably she wouldn't have to. If just me and it's a hassle while she's running from the chunk to the chicken to the door, so it's a bad thing. So the Torah says there's no reason not to.
Maybe
yes, sir.
If Mishloch asks for more, what is the approach?
There's a halal. Every.
So you give.
If he asks for more, that depends. You have to make an evaluation.
Yeah.
The halach is of that only a chazar b'sof and give matan of a wedding. If I know as a person, if he's asking for more and he pulls my heartstrings the right way, so I give him more. But if he, recently someone came knocking my door and wanted $100. $100 for me. I said thank you, but no thank you. Okay? Because if I would give him $100, then he'd go tell all his friends I gave him $100. And I have a nonstop thing. The halacha is very clear. I'm not afraid to give him $100. He wants $100. I'm not afraid to give him $100. If I have no money in my pocket, so then I'm not going to get anything. He said, I'll take an envelope. There's a Torah in this world. The Torah that dictates how you're supposed to respond to this. And the Torah says, if you have money in your pocket, he asks, you have to give it. If you have no money, you don't. If the owner will be carrying a credit card machine around, something else. So far, I haven't seen it. Yes, not wrong.
Rambam says that a person should give smaller amounts to more people. Is it better to do that in order to build a Torah to sufficient people? They need large sums of money from people. Somebody has a choice to give a donation to start a kol to build a Makom Torah, or they could give out all their money to Lamed Torah who are coming around to the house in small amounts.
The Rambam says, "Hakol on the Perish Mishnayos, Hakol v'Rov Hamaaseh." He says that you don't write one check to the Federation, have them take care of it. But it doesn't mean in the total budget you can't give 50% to a large amount here and then smaller amounts as you go on. Because the Rambam says, unless you train yourself to keep it. Every time you stick your hand in your pocket, you're breaking a meter raw. And if you want to break it completely, so the more you do it, the more you're breaking that meter raw.
Has a person know how to do that? That means the person has $100,000 to give that, they could give it 100,000 people, $1, or they could support an institution and give $75,000, and then...
It depends, very simply, according to... The person has to make a judgment. On the one hand, you want the biggest bang for the buck. On the other hand, you have to balance both on. And it's not a yes or no. That let's say you had 100,000 and you gave to one, 50,000 would make a major difference. And the other 50,000, there's nothing wrong, that doesn't violate the Rambam's Yisod, of Hakol v'Firov Hamas.
So what's the
Hakdara
of Hakol
v'Firov
Hamas? How much?
That you have to be able to give on a regular basis, small amounts to anyone who comes to you. And then you can, with that, you can balance off something else. Okay. I think it's time for me to move.
What? One second.